This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody, to the Aftershock Central podcast. I'm Ronnie. Travis is here.
What's up, Aftershockers?
Martin is not. He's like, he just comes in when he wants to.
Yeah. You know, he's management. So,
yeah, he's got those banker hours.
Yeah. We'll get him next time.
Yeah. Sounds like the Cubs. We'll get him next year.
Didn't they win recently?
I know they did, but it was like the first time in what? 100 years?
First time ever, yeah, I thought. yeah, so now it's the Dodgers, dude.
Yeah, true.
Shout out to Paul. Not that he's listening.
No, he doesn't listen.
Although, I hear that he's reading Animosity now.
He is reading Animosity now, and he's loving it. So,
yeah, dude, so we could get him on sometime.
Yeah, which, this past weekend, I was at a semi-local con. That's big for Missouri, and I got to talk to Marguerite Bennett, and I got to talk to Ja Nitz and Colin Bunn, and so that was really cool.
Yeah, you made out, dude. You talked to other people as well, other creators. Like, that's just Aftershock relevant.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I talked to B. Clay Moore, who I've hounded Joe about getting involved in writing a book for Aftershock, and B. Clay said that he's pitched a couple, so, you know, we'll see where it goes and go from there.
Yeah, that's tight, dude. But, did you get any like interesting scoops on the Aftershock stuff that you can share in private later?
I didn't, actually.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, I talked to Colin for about 20, 30 minutes, and he actually is from or lives in Missouri. And at least once or twice a year, he comes to the local comic shop and does signings. Like the last time he did a signing, it was for Harrow County, and which is an Aftershock. It's Dark Horse. And then Drax just came out, number one. So he was doing that. And then this year, I think he's coming back in March, and I'm hoping that's when his new Aftershock book comes out.
Nice.
So I'll have him do that. And he is a fan of the show, and I have his email. So he wants to come on and talk to us about a couple things. So
awesome, dude. Yeah, we'll have to get some good questions together.
Yep. And I had him sign a variant copy of Dark Arc number one. And then I had John Nitz also said that he'd be interested coming on, and he enjoyed your and Martin's episode that you guys talked quantumly about Fujitsu.
Oh, nice, dude. Yeah. That's a great book, dude. Like, so I'm curious with that one, whether they kind of leave it open for season two when it wraps up, you know?
Yep. So he said once it wraps up, he'd love to come on and talk to us too.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much crazy stuff, so I'm curious to see how all that's going to wrap up, and, like, I'm sure there will be questions.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then I got the, what was it, the local comic shop day? That's a thing, right?
I
got the Animosity, the Rise, the hardcover, like, before it came out, because it came out for that day, and then now here recently it's getting ready to come out. And so I had Marguerite sign that.
Nice, dude.
And talked to her for a little bit. She had a longer, line, of course, because she also does Batwoman. And she was right there around Tom King and Scott Snyder and them. So her line and area was more jam-packed with people than the other people but they were just as busy, because I could have stayed there and talked to them longer, but I didn't want to hold anybody up, especially like the little kids that wanted to show everybody that I mentioned, like drawings and whatnot. So
yeah, dude. Well, I mean, yeah, like it sounds like you had like a good talk with her too, right? Like yeah. She mentioned she listens to the show.
Yep. She listens, and she'd be happy to come on. So we just got to reach out to her, and I got contact information for her. So seems like the creators listen, and you know, fans of Aftershock listen and kind of like to hear what our deep dives into the books and everything.
Well, yeah, that's why we do it, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, for one, they're great books, right? Because there's only, I mean, let's be honest, there's only like a handful, and I'm talking like issues, not actual like books that I haven't really dug, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree. That
makes our job easier. And I say job, like, you know, it's a job, but, you know, I have fun talking with you and Martin and hearing what you guys, your perspective. Perspectives on the books are, because sometimes they're different than mine even.
Yeah, no, I agree that the books definitely across the line are, you know, pretty strong, too, very strong. So that always makes it more enjoyable to discuss, you know, like especially, you know, if you kind of have some amount of attachment to like the company, you know, like.
Right.
Becomes harder. It would be harder if they weren't all, you know, pretty great and like interesting, yeah. You know, like thought provoking. So
right,
it's win-win.
Yeah, and it also helps like sometimes we don't get the previews on time, which sucks. But I mean, we get them for free, so you know why complain about it. But like everything else has pretty much been on par, and like Joe is. Great, and he gets back to us right away type thing. They're more personable, I guess, right? So anybody in the company tweets us back or, you know, whatever, is happy to talk to us about the product itself as a whole. As to whether you're talking to, like, a big machine, like one of the big two, I'm assuming, right?
For sure, dude. Yeah, and, I'm trying to... think about maybe butting up to, you know, the Aftershock guys, Joe and Ron or whatever, like, you know, like, given certain developments in other companies that I, you know, have attachments to, comic companies, you know, like I could, you know, be in a position to switch allegiance over time, you know, like, you know, they certainly aren't super kind of outgoing right now and like responding to fans that I've seen. So right. if Aftershock is operating that way, like that's a good thing.
Oh yeah. Well, I got one other bit of news before we dive into the three books that we're going to talk about. The Art of Jim Starlin, The Life in Words and Pictures hardcover comes out on 5/2/18. And it's 328 pages.
Damn. Is that like Marvel only, or is it kind of a grab bag? Or
I would assume that it's everything of his drawings.
Okay, word.
So, because it says A Life in Words and Pictures. So I'm assuming it's like what he writes or what he's not really drawn, right? But just, you know, different things, his different takes on things. So
yeah, that could be fascinating, dude.
Yeah, and it's cool that Aftershock has it, and not like you said, not like Marvel or somebody like that.
Oh, word, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and he has a little short story in the Shock hardcover that comes out also
in May, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, coincidence.
Yeah, so that's really cool. All right, let's deep dive into our books. First up. We're going to do Cold War number 1 by Christopher Sabella and Hayden Sherman. You want to give us a nutshell?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so 5 centuries in the future, a group of people are awakened from cryostasis, only to discover they have been drafted to fight a war against an unnamed enemy and with no explanation. They are led by a former soldier and mercenary, but he was shot in the face. Meanwhile, one of the other recruits, Vin, seems to know more than he or she lets on about this future world. And she reveals that she has traveled from the past in search of revenge.
Yep.
Okay, so, like, I don't know if that's like quite correct. Like, did I screw anything up?
No, no, it sounded pretty good to me.
All right, so Vin, do we think Vin is a man or a woman?
I thought it was a woman.
Yeah, I mean, like, long hair, so we'll just go woman for now. Like, yeah. But you know, TBD. Okay, so like, first off, I gotta say, like, I was totally surprised when this dude Rook, who they like. Yeah. Seems to be like front and center main character for the entire issue.
Yes.
Just gets like blown away. I mean, and he's like the only one you see in like the previews and stuff. So like that was such a curveball, like right to me.
Yeah.
And
he's our main narrator up until that point as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, I kind of liked him, you know, like even though clearly like, you know, he's kind of got a psychopath tendency, like yeah. on a gradient, like he's like a comedian type, you mm. know, like, you know, or like he obviously like to me recalls like visually Judge Dredd.
Right.
Like I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of like this guy. He's a dick, but, you know, like he kicks ass and yeah, like surprise.
Yeah. He's like Punisher, Judge Dredd mixed, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, obviously he loves his job, and he says that, like, two or three times in this issue. Well, until he gets his head blown off, but...
Yeah, I mean, like, but, like, whatever was his deal, like, he seems to kind of just be about, like, it's all about him, right? Like, that's what Vin was saying, was like, you know, he's not, he's never fought for anybody but himself, and so, like, you can't trust a man like that.
Right. Right.
You know, like he wasn't really working for Uncle Sam and or the highest bidder. He always was working for the highest bidder, I guess, you know.
Right. Because it benefited him.
Yeah. So he would have been a super morally gray character. And like in his defense, you look at him in this issue. Right. And he's really not wrong. Like in this situation wherein kind of obviously a lot of people are like, wait, what's happening? You know, like. Who are we fighting? Like what is this war about? You know, like they don't know what side they're on, but like, basically he's like, look, these doors are going to open. You got a gun in your hand. You can either get shot or like fight to survive, you know, like yeah. Even if you were on the wrong side, would you still just be like, oh no, I don't know. I'm not sure if you can surrender in, you know, like they certainly don't address that. In this future timeline, so he's not wrong, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like an apocalyptic time, but not like we're used to seeing, kind of. You know,
well,
I mean, usually we see it like in like zombies or like an asteroid hit or you know something like that. Now it's just war.
Yeah, I mean, it's still very unclear, like what is even the. Like premise or like the setting right now, you know, like very little so far has been explained about this world,
right?
And what they're seeing,
right? But isn't there the one? I mean, you could tell it's. I thought there was one scene like where they're on the top of the building or whatever, and they're like looking over at the city, and the city's all either bombed or destroyed to hell.
Yeah. I mean, so like you have some visual cues and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So
and you see these like shamble bots walking around, which like they're pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely like you said. Like it gives the Judge Dredd feel, even down to the pill that he takes, right? The mm-hmm. adrenaline pill. And then you got the two lovers, right? That are crazy.
Well, okay. Again, also. Maybe they're not wrong, right? Especially if they think they're going to die, right? Like, isn't that if a large group of people or whatever knew they were going to die like imminently, like wouldn't some fraction of those just be like, "All right, well, like I'm going to die screwing." So like
okay, yes. That part I'm not saying that they're crazy about, but I'm saying like their tattoo part.
That was crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I have tattoos all over. And if I get thawed and then unthawed and my tattoos are gone, I'm not going to cut myself, like, with a pocket knife or whatever just to make new ones.
Yeah, no, fair enough, yeah. I forgot about that part. They're a little off.
Yeah, but it's cool because it adds layers to the team, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Again, like as far as the team, we kind of like see people say, you know, like basic stuff about their background or whatever, but I forget if the speech bubbles are even connected with like with characters for the most part.
Well,
you know,
basically we see the two lovers, and then we see Rook, who obviously gets his head blown off, and then we see John, who talks to Ven, and then that's the main ones that we see. We see the other ones, you know, bitching about why they're there, why they got thawed out, whose side are they on, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, I mean, I just think, like, obviously, like, it seems like Vin and I guess you said John was the other guy. Like they seem to be the ones that I'm sure will stick around. Like if everybody else, you know, peeled off quickly, I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah. But, I mean, after this first three quarters of this issue, I don't know what to think anymore.
It's super disorienting, dude. You know, it's like you're experiencing it all POV as they're like waking up from cryosleep, and they like intentionally skip over like telling you what has happened, you know, because like I would guess that, you know, maybe they are fighting on the wrong side, you know, like they have no reason to trust that this person who recorded this video message actually is the president. They don't know who they're fighting. It's quite possible that was kept secret intentionally and not just because they ran out of time before they launched him into a battle.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But okay. I gotta ask, like, this thing with Vin, like, I think that's going to be the meat of like what the story is, you know, because either she is like somehow she has knowledge of the future, right? Or she's from the future originally.
Right. Yeah. Something.
So like also she's going to somehow enact revenge 500 years in the future. So I like that to me would suggest that she's somehow from the future. Like, How would her vengeance really even be applicable that far in the future unless whoever offended her also went into cryosleep and is still in the future?
Yeah, and she is, or it Vin is a woman because she says, let's see, what you can come with me or stay here and die. I've got shit to do. And then one of the teammates says, "Grandma's got a backbone, and why isn't
she?" Oh yeah,
who put her in charge? Type thing.
Sure.
But then John does raise that question of like, "We're 500 years in the future. What could you be looking for?" And then she just says, "Vengeance. Is that okay with you?" And that's when we draw to a close on this issue. So, like you is like, what's her past or? How does she know that when she wakes up from being thawed that whatever wronged her, she's going to be able to take vengeance for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I wonder if it is like the only thing that I can think of besides that, like she traveled back into time and had to get back to the future somehow. It would be that like she's like essentially chasing somebody that like went into cryosleep or something.
Right.
And maybe that person has something to do with kind of this world that has like unfolded or something, you know, like, I don't know. It's
she also alludes to paying them, whoever them is, a lot of money to get her to this point. So, cause she says I paid a lot of goddamn money for them to get me here. And I intend to get what I came for. Is she talking about them who had the cryostasis company? Or is she talking about them, like, other people, like, working to get her from, you know what I mean? So that way she thaws out at a fixed point in time.
Man, that's definitely interesting, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
For sure, yeah. Like, the mind runs wild, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm with you. I think she'll be the meat of the story going forward. But man, with reading three quarters of this and then we get a curveball right in the last quarter of it, like I said, there's going to be more oh shit moments, I'm sure.
Yeah, dude.
So I have a question for you before we wrap this one up.
Sure thing.
Who's the next to go of the team?
Well, I mean, like, we only identified about, like, five, right? So are you asking if it's going to be one of the couple?
Yeah, do you think it's going to be John? Or you and I both agree that Grandma's going to last a couple issues at least, right?
Yeah.
So it would be John or one of the couples, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't take much stock in either of the couple right now. Like, they haven't been characterized, mm-hmm. although... You know, if you lose one, like that opens up, again, possibilities for what happens to the one that's still around, you know? Like, obviously, we saw a whole wave of recruits just shoot themselves in the head rather than even, like, try to fight.
Right.
So there's precedent there to just be like, you know what? Nope. Not worth it anymore.
Yeah. I think that the guy on the couple will be the next to go. That's my
prediction. Yeah, he's kind of a dummy, right?
Yeah, and I think that if he goes, then the girlfriend will completely, like, lose it. And we'll see, and that'll lead us down another rabbit hole.
Yeah. That's a fair enough guess.
All right.
Let me just say, just so it's on record, I'm curious if... this Memtech trademark is going to have larger significance because I felt like they kind of like mentioned it prominently a few times right in the beginning. And, you know, maybe that's just to establish what's happening when they're like, you're flashing back to your happy place.
Yes.
But it just seemed to be really prominent early on. So I'm just curious if there's something more to that.
No, that's a good point, because I was going to bring that up too in my like final thoughts before we did. Like, I thought it was weird that they're deep in the trenches and like the tech would come out or the AI voice would come out and be like, go to your happy place. And would you like to go to your happy place? And then they would say yes, and then it would send them there. But yet there's like bullets whizzing and, you know, people dying and getting shot left and right, like right next to them. So it's kind of like brainwashing, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. No, that like that's not what you want to do. Like when you have like soldiers under fire, you know, like that you I could see most scenarios like that's going to distract you or like make you accept death rather than try to, you know, fight for stuff.
Right.
So it's weird. Yeah. You know, like maybe, you know, like. They're just like, you know, grist for the mill or something. They're a diversion or, you know, like certainly would explain why you take a bunch of people that have no military background and you're like, all right, you're fighting now.
Yeah,
cool.
Right.
How many options did you exhaust before you thought that was like worth trying?
Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't even know what group this is, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe honestly, they're like the last people alive.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Of the cryo state, right?
Or just like all of the people that were alive on Earth have been killed in this like war, whatever is going on. And like they were just like, OK, well, the only thing left are these people that are frozen. Bring them out of hibernation.
Yep, I can see that. That's a different twist because we don't see the president. We just see the video. The same video they see of the president.
Yeah.
Trist written.
Yeah, dude. I mean, obviously, it like there's just so many different directions it could go. So like I'm pretty down and, you know, we always talk about first issues and like, was this a good first issue? Mm-hmm. Like, I would say, yeah, you know, like it gives you a lot to entice you. It's full of action and obviously huge twists. But like, I don't know. I am, you know, like tantalized by like what we know and what's a mystery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'm interested where it's going to go.
Yep. So go ahead and tame all this bad boy up.
All right. I'll go 4.5 out of 5. It appears you're currently decapitated Tamos.
Awesome. Dude, I'm right there with you. I think I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5. I've got shit to do, Tamos.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one is Animosity Evolution by Marguerite Bennett, Eric Capster, and colors by Rob Swaggy P. Swagger.
Swaggy P.
So you got a nutshell for this one too?
Yeah. So, Wintermute's raiders take over a farm and begin growing crops to feed the city. Penny and Octavia are being questioned by the gangster snapping turtle, Mr. Kazi. So Kazi says he didn't kill Deacon, and after discovering Octavia's identity, he sent them off to be delivered to someone, perhaps to the Jaguar. Meanwhile, Wintermute and Adam are discussing Deacon's murder, and Wintermute orders them to search for Octavia.
That is a spot-on nutshell for me.
Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of stuff going on in this issue, I thought.
Yep, but before we get to there, I want to talk about the raiders for a second and raiding the farm.
Sure.
Okay, so I know that this is taking place, we think, simultaneously with the main book, right?
Assumably.
Just on a different coast.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw that, I was thinking that Evolution was taking place a little before, and we saw how Wintermute and everybody and her group took over this farm. I was wondering, is it really that big of a stretch that they took over the farm that we see in the other one? Like, that's like they're the big bad that has to get paid in the city. But, I mean, because I know that Marguerite said that she wanted to tie them together to, like, have a crossover at some point. But she didn't want to do it early. So, probably later on. So,
yeah.
I just thought it was kind of, you know, crazy that we're seeing farms being taken over or overran or ruled per different each book.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think, you know, like, in looking at that, you know, one thing you might consider is just geographically, like, do we know where Jesse and them are?
In Virginia.
Yeah, so, like, that, I think, would imply that if they were working for the same, like, if they're working for Wintermute, that she controls the entire country or the majority of it.
Right.
Which would be crazy. Like, that would definitely
be... That'd be next level, right?
For sure, yeah. Like, that'd be a shock to say the least. Yeah, I think it could just be, you know, like as you said, like that'll come later or something, the connection, but like,
yeah.
Like that's, you win points for the crazy theory, dude. If that comes through, Marguerite is going to give you the gold star.
No, but I was just saying, like, that when I first read that thought popped through my mind, and then I realized that it's supposed to be happening simultaneously at the same time. So kind of cancels it out, unless Wintermute has her bionic paw on the whole land.
Yeah, well, I'm interested, since you mention it, like I think the distinction there is, like, clearly, like the city kind of, like they control the farm, but the farm seems to, like, have some autonomy, you know, like
right.
So it's a different style, like versus what we're seeing in Evolution, and that could just be a thing of scale, you know, like, we don't know what the city is or whatever, but also we know that I believe the implication is that's run by humans, right? That city, and so, like, they don't really care about the animals, you know, like they're not counting them in their, like, you know, we got these many, like, things to feed stats.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like probably there, a lot of the problems you see in, like, Wintermute's area, you know, might not apply. Like, if animals can eat other animals, or, you know, if the food chain is functioning beyond just people eating animals, then, you know, like some of these problems solve themselves, you know, like, that's really the meat of, no pun intended, like what is going on in, like, all of this story, or at least with the raiders, is, like, yo, we are all going to straight up starve right away if, like, we don't get our arms around it, you know, and, like, you know, obviously they're taking over like all this land and they're doing that to grow the stuff. They then have the conversation about that they are kind of like eschewing any technology. It's all going to be like animal labor. And the point of that ostensibly seems to be that, you know, like basically that's a mechanism to deprive people of food. It, you know, it's like, oh, right. If they won't work, then that's one less person that we have to feed. So that's a win, you know, right. And maybe I was talking about this to somebody. Maybe you can straighten me out. Right. Like in, let's say, Wintermute society specifically, animal right. dies of natural causes or, you know, dies of execution or whatever. Do the carnivores then eat the dead animal?
You would think so.
Because I feel like there would be carnivores who are like, oh, no, I don't care how it died, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like the vulture or whatever, or the, you know, like various carnivores, they'd be like, oh, no, I'm going to eat that right now. You know, that's
right,
what I'm supposed to eat. So, like, again.
And not be wasteful, right?
Yeah. Like, so much of this society seems to be about, like, you know, how do we control the population, you know? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's like simple story on like a grander scale, right? Because that's what they are here is like, let's get back to the circle of life, basically. I'm supposed to eat you, you're supposed to do that, and now we can just think and go about our business, because now if we call a truce and we don't eat anybody except for what's ethically okay to eat, then we're all going to starve or we're all going to populate times 10 and not have enough to eat, right?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, plus when the second wake happens and plants are conscious, like, they're all screwed.
Yeah. Especially those Venus flytraps.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the dandelions that you have to worry about.
Well, they survive anything, right?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Good stuff, dude. Okay, so should we switch maybe to like the other storyline, like obviously that's going on, like that's like the macro thing, but then you've got kind of like all this stuff. Basically, Octavia is kind of like at the center of two storylines. You know, she's right. being questioned by a gangster with a sweet extendo neck.
Yes,
and you know, like. Obviously, you know, she's a person of interest to Wintermute in that, you know, like the Deacon murder, you know? So I don't know. I find that interesting, you know, like where that could be going.
Yeah. It almost like Wintermute is actually like a tyrant type. And now we're getting like the other story. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So,
because we've already seen, like, a suicide bomber try to take Wintermute out anyway in the previous issue, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how crazy is it to think that Animosity proper is the book where we follow the quote-unquote good guys, but Animosity Evolution, we're made to think that we're following another group of survivors and good guys, but we're actually following the bad guys?
Well, dude, that's, I think, why Wintermute specifically is so fascinating, you know, like, because it's a female, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's, like, up against basically impossible odds, you know? Like, how is she going to run this, you know, new society, egalitarian, where, like, everybody's got to eat? Like, it seems very daunting, and, you know, when faced with impossible choices and, you know, like, you know, terrible odds, you know, like sometimes you have to make those like tough decisions or whatever, you know, like,
right.
Like what comes to mind, like just as an easy reference would be Harada from, Harbinger.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't think Wintermute really necessarily is that whatever narcissistic, you know, like I don't think she's as far gone as Harada, but I think that she is like, well, you know, like if this goes south, then like 10 billion animals and people are gonna die, you know, so those are the stakes,
Right. Or even like a different lower scale than that of like Doctor Doom and Latveria.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Where she's just iron control, like dictatorship of what she can type of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly like, you know, we got like a nice character moment in this issue, especially where, you know, Adam is like, dude, you're fucking creeping me out. You know, like you got in the head of like these like scheming murderers. And, you know, like it's how you did that because it's exactly what you would have done. You know, like that's not a, like really speaking good right. about like how you operate. So yeah, like certainly I guess it's fair to question Wintermute in all of this, you know, like I still have a little bit of a sympathetic, you know, assumption based on, you know, certain things about how they've set up the story, but that is interesting, right, yeah. you know? And like, okay. Yeah. So if it, you know, if this is all pointing towards some kind of scheme that's like aimed against Wintermute, like taking her down, does that imply that the Jaguar is like at the head of that, and that they're perhaps delivering Octavia and Penny to her or him?
Yeah, I got that assumption too.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I was trying. I was looking at panels here because Wintermute's more mysterious this issue, it seems like, than what we've seen her before, and she's been mysterious before, right? Just because, like, there for a while, it seemed like because she catches Adam off guard when she just hops down off the bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's that panel where he says, "Well, you're looking well," like it's like. Totally shock, and then he asks her about the pain, and so the way she's drawn, and you know, like with the cybernetics and stuff, I know she's supposed to look like that, but she definitely seems mysterious and evil looking, or at least cold and calculated looking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like it. I think it's compelling, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. It keeps you guessing for sure, because once she does something that's cold and calculating, then she does something totally opposite too. Because here, you know, like he almost pets her, and then something happens, and then you know he's venting and you know screaming at her about how he's just a veterinarian or whatever, and she's like reaching out to console him, and then she pulls away really quick and says that. You know, we will together, and we are going to make just a world.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, like, it's possible that, you know, Adam is becoming, like, one of the like, closest characters to her, you know, like in her life, like he's probably, like, one of those that she can trust the most and, you know, all that cares about the most. You know, like, and guess if that is the case, you have to worry about his safety a little bit, you know?
Yeah, right.
If we start to see the, you know, like her other close friends, assumedly maybe the Animata, the other Animata, like starting to, you know, die in mysterious circumstances, like he would certainly be at risk as well.
Right.
Because it seems to be a personal... they're suggesting a personal mission, you know, operation. So
Right. That
almost maybe suggests, like, is there actually a pre-existing relationship between the Jaguar and Wintermute, you know?
Yeah. Man, there's tons. There's just more to the surface than what meets the eye in these books.
Yeah, and you bring it out when you discuss it as well, you know?
Yeah. You got any final thoughts before we tally her up?
I think I'm good.
All right.
So I will go 4 out of 5, one-armed bartender Tamos.
All right. I'm going to give it a solid 4. I'm like He-Man Mechanic Tamos. Because that's what I thought of when I saw that. Because, like, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, so And He-Man had this friend that was Mechaneck, that where his neck extended.
Yeah, no, that's a solid reference, dude. I love He-Man.
All right. And the third and final book for us for this week is Baby Teeth number 8. Donnie Cates, Gary Brown, and Mark Englert on letters.
All right.
You got a nutshell for us?
Yeah. All right. So Christine explains to Sadie that their family lineage dates back to an immaculate conception by the devil to a nun in biblical times, and that the Antichrist will come from their bloodline. They serve Lucifer to bring about the end of days and expect God to reward them for their efforts. She also reveals that Dancy is her son, although he is an abomination and the result of exotic dark rituals. Sadie is overwhelmed, and Christine puts her to sleep and steals Clark. Elsewhere, the captain wakes up and spars with Dancy before a Tanuki demon shows up and roasts Dancy to a crisp, and they leave to find Sadie. But Dancy only stays down temporarily and chases after Heather and the captain.
Good nutshell.
Thanks, buddy.
So, yeah. So, this purple raccoon?
Yeah, dude.
So, do you think it's there to protect Clark? Or to go after him?
I mean, that's a good question.
I'm kind of starting in the middle of the book, I guess, but...
No, that's we could start wherever, dude. Just as an aside, by the way, they call it a Tanuki demon, right?
Right, yeah.
And I looked it up, and Tanuki is actually an animal called a raccoon dog. Like, as featured in the anime movie Pompoko.
Okay.
So, it, like, you know how they call it a raccoon and whatnot, like, all the time? Like, for real, like the demon's name is a raccoon dog.
Right. Well, I know Martin and I just call it Purple Raccoon because that's what Donnie Cates called it at the panel at C2E2 when he was pitching issue number one to us.
Yeah, no, I just thought that was, like, a cool pull, like,
yeah.
and so deep cut or whatever that minus a Google search, like, I would never have known. But, yeah, so to your point, though, like, about, like, what's going on with the raccoon demon, right? Like,
right.
I guess my initial read would be kind of, like, seems like he's working for Clark on some in a way, you know? Like he protected Heather and the captain. And you know, like he's whatever going with them, like on their way, you know,
yeah. Because when he first got there or when it first got there, I only said he, because I saw when he barfed up the collar, but that was the neighbor's dog though. Right.
Yeah.
Marty. But he took or attacked the girl bounty hunter. At first, right?
Yeah.
And then he was on the plane when they were flying to here. And then, you know, he basically, like you said, was protecting Heather and the captain. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested, like, because, like, we first see, don't we see him appear in, you know, whatever the settlement is in the last issue when Clark is crying for a second, because it seems like every time he appears is right after Clark cries with the like crazy red thing and the nosebleeds.
Right. Yep. Agreed.
So I guess, you know, like we're kind of assuming that like whenever that happens, like the demon ports in, and that, you know, like it's most likely the same demon, like not just like a different one every time.
Right.
Yeah, it must be because he ate the dog. Yeah, so it's the same one.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's the same one.
Yeah. I mean, all signs, I would say, seem to be that, you know, like, he's working for Clark to protect him or something. But, you know, I guess it's possible that he's just trying to track him and, you know, like, eliminate, you know, what seem to be hostiles.
Right, yeah.
You know, and he's like, oh, I'll just follow these people who seem to know where he is. But that suggests, I guess, a level of intelligence from an animal that seems to be juvenile and, like, not even able to speak.
Well, true. Yeah. But, I mean, like, say, with a dog, per se, like, they can tell, like, relatives, right? Like, like, I know our dog can tell the kids apart, right? Like, they would be related. So that's why I was saying, like, with Clark and then Heather and the captain type thing. Like, he would be able to sense it. Even he isn't on the wake part, like, with animosity and just being feral. He could still sense that they're trying to help her and Clark and not hurt her, basically.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. Like, that's kind of, like, his mission, you know, to the extent that it seems like, you know, it may just be instinctual.
Right, yeah. And then, of course, Sadie's mom, a.k.a. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
Obviously is batshit crazy.
It's very confused. I don't know if how much you want to dig into all of that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, okay, fair enough. Like, to be fair, you know, like, maybe organized religion is a little confused with this stuff, you know, because, like, I'm not going to disagree with, like, one of the points that she made, which is, like, you know, if God is both infallible and omniscient, like, you know, like the revelation stuff is in the Bible, you know, like, it's understood that it's going to happen. So, I don't know, maybe it's not that much of a stretch to think that, like, somebody who helps to bring that about is, like working in the interests of God or whatever. I guess it's just, right. It's just a strange assumption that you're like this, you know, what God wants is for, you know, like his creation, you know, to be destroyed, you know, like just because he knows it's going to be destroyed doesn't mean that, like, he's in a hurry for that to happen. So I don't know, like, it definitely seems obvious, like, obviously it's, seems to be confused, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, like, we're going to be rewarded when, you know, like, when all of the sinners go to hell or whatever, you know, like BTW, like, Jamie Lee sleeps around a lot, like, while she's married, you know, like, so there's a lot of assumptions going on that this is really what the God wants, even though they're serving Lucifer ostensibly at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And then she takes Clark and then she says, "Mommy's got you" at the end.
Yeah. Well, she also says, like, "You're not ready for what comes next," right? Basically, that's what she says. So right. I'm very curious what comes next, because they also seem to telegraph that their plan was to keep Clark alive until he was an adult before he, you know, drinks the blood of the impure and becomes the Antichrist.
Right.
Or dies.
Right.
So, so he's, unless they turn him into an adult, like, with magic, I'm not sure what their, like, next move is that, you know, is going to be so, you know, shocking.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, but this is, like, each week that it comes out, this is like goes right to the top of the read pile.
Yeah, it's it definitely grabs your attention, and, you know, like, great cliffhangers and stuff. It's a popcorn book.
Yeah, definitely. So you want to give some final thoughts on this one?
Let me just browse in my notes. I feel like we did a pretty good job. Okay, I mean, this maybe connects to the same kind of topic, I guess, but, you know, like, when we first kind of see Dancy in the issue, like he's talking to the captain, and he's like, "Hey, Cap, you know, like before you do anything, like, we need to talk," you know? So I was just curious what he was going to talk to him about, you know, like, whether that the substance of is like, you understand this is what we're doing with Clark right now, it's going to happen whether you want it to or not, and I'm going to stop you, or, you know, maybe it's like Clark is in danger and, you know, like, maybe I want to help you. I don't, like, you could speculate, I guess, on what that conversation could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, "Hey, I'm actually your stepson," or whatever.
Yeah. Like, yeah, your ex-wife's.
Yeah. Well, when she would have had him, they would have still been married, right? Or towards the end of their marriage, anyways?
I thought that they kind of implied that he was after they split, because she had Sadie, I think, when they were still together. And then she's like, and I had other children.
Yeah, but if Heather's hers too, then, and he perceivably is like the same age as Heather by looks, or even older than Heather, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, like,
which brings me to another creepy thought here, because Heather has his coat on.
Oh no!
When the captain wakes up, right?
Finish your thought.
Well, I was just saying, and like, she doesn't even say anything. Like, she's outside smoking a cigarette when Dancy goes through the window, and then the captain comes, you know, outside, and he says that we're going to get your sister. And then he asks him why she's wearing his jacket, and then she like gives that like guilty look on her face, and just like and then that's when Dancy shows up in a rage.
Wait, so you think he took his half sister to the boneyard? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I think. Yeah.
Does he know? Do you think? Like, I mean, this isn't Jimmy's Bastards, dude. I don't know.
No, right? Yeah, but I mean, at this point, how could he not know?
Like, I mean, clearly he's whatever, foul and, you know, like, impure. So maybe, like, he doesn't mind so much.
He doesn't care. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, he looks a little bit off. And clearly his mother, like says that, like, he's, I don't know, like take your pick, like, an abomination and, like, yeah, like, shouldn't exist. So, like, what, maybe he's half demon? Like, you know, like, I'm a little confused what he's supposed to be exactly.
Right, yeah.
So maybe there's more than one, like, cringeworthy thing if they, you know, hooked up. Or, you know, maybe, like, that's just a fan fiction for you to write someday.
I doubt it. I can't do that. All right, so let's tamo this bad boy up then.
All right, I will go 4.5 out of 5 engulfed in flames tamos.
Oh, you almost stole it. I'm going 5 out of 5 fire-breathing, murdering raccoon tamo.
Nice. Yeah, that was the best panel, dude.
Yeah, because even the captain looks like he's like distraught or whatever right there. Like, what the hell just happened type of thing.
Oh, well, you never seen somebody burn alive before?
Well, yeah, but, or no, but, you know.
Down to a skeleton, like, instantly.
But, because, see, then he's like, God, I'm the worst parent in the world. So, yeah. To be continued. You ready to wrap this one up?
Yeah, most staff, dude.
All right. On the Twitter machine, I'm at Rombar316.
I'm at The Great Magnet.
And Martin is at Geekvine. And we are collectively at Aftershock Pod. And got anything else before we go? Oh, I do have something. If you go to nerdylegion.com and in the bottom right corner, there's the threadless icon. Click on it. Then you can click on Aftershock Central Podcast. And then we have t-shirts, water bottles, coffee mugs, bags. We have all kinds of goodies. Did you know that, Travis?
I didn't, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got swag. So now Swaggy P has to actually buy swag.
Dude, like, my Christmas shopping is all done now. Thank you.
Yeah, see? And like I said, there's 3 different sizes of bags. So if you buy the big one, and then you get a coffee mug, and then you get your wife a shirt, and you get you a shirt, then all that stuff can go inside the bag. See how that works?
Yeah, dude, I think maybe you need, like, a special package, you know, like to get all of that. Like give them a little bit of a discount, you know?
Yeah.
Pre-assembled.
All right. Let's get out of here. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds good, man.
Until next time.